Case number 08-7083, Sarah Carr et al. Versus District of Columbia Appellant. Ms. Anderson for the appellant, Mr. Schimber for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stacey Anderson for the District. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. The District Court's decision in this case should be reversed because there were genuine issues of material fact that were in dispute. The evidence, when viewed in the light most favorable to the District, demonstrates that a reasonable, prudent, cautious officer could conclude that the plaintiffs in this case were willfully engaged in a riot or knowingly parading without a permit. As with any probable cause inquiry, the evidence in this case should be viewed from the perspective of the officers who were facing a rapidly evolving set of events. Here, the officers were faced with a cohesive group of individuals, some of whose members were engaged in property destruction that spanned the course of several city blocks. The officers witnessed spray painting of buildings, vandalism to cars, the burning of trash, the destruction of windows in commercial buildings, and the violence.
What's the link between the criminal acts that the officers saw and these plaintiffs?
Your Honor, the officers...
What's the particularized finding of probable cause for these plaintiffs?
Your Honor, the officers in this case were confronted with a mob. They dealt with the protesters as a group. In Cullinane, this court recognized that when you're faced with a mob that's infected with violence, such as this one, that the officers aren't required to deal with the parties as individuals, but may deal with the group as a unit, and that's what the officers did in this case. The officers witnessing this had a reasonable basis.
You're saying the law does not require a particularized showing of probable cause before arrest?
I'm saying, Your Honor, when the officers
can deal with mobs, and the way to do that is to disperse them, right? Give them warnings and disperse. You can't arrest without a particularized showing of probable cause.
Your Honor, the particularized showing of probable cause in this case was the officer's reasonable belief that every participant in that riot was engaged in the riot.
Okay, what was the basis of their reasonable belief that every participant, 250 to 300 people or so,
correct,
right?
Your Honor. Again, the appearance of the crowd at the time. In this case, we had, again, as I noted earlier, a course of property destruction that spanned two or more city blocks. During that course of property destruction, the participants remained in their group. They were cohesive throughout that process. That gave the officers reason to believe that the people that were there were willfully engaged in that riot. In addition,
by virtue of the fact that they were with the group?
That's one factor. The second factor, Your Honor, is that the officers observed several instances of the entire group, it appeared to them, cheering in response to the windows
being
broken.
You say it appeared to them. Are you equivocating on that? Did they see all 250 people or all 70 that they arrested?
They
raised their hands and cheer.
It appeared to them, through their declarations, Your Honor, that it was the entire group. It would be impossible for me to stand, for the officers to say that, yes, I counted 297 people, and each one of those 297 persons were cheering. That's an impossible task. The officers were confronted.
Isn't that precisely the task that the Fourth Amendment requires?
No, and the district doesn't believe so.
For arresting?
No, sir, Your Honor, it does not. Again, the standard is reasonable probability. The officers had a reasonable basis to believe that the people they arrested.
This has to be a particularized showing, right?
But not as to each individual. In a situation where the officers.
What is a particularized showing if it isn't as to each individual? When I say particularized showing, that's what I'm referring to, each individual.
Okay, and again, Your Honor, I don't think in the context of a group offense that the officers have to be able to ascribe a misdeed to each individual in the group.
Excuse me, counsel, isn't your answer to that question the particularized showing in a group riot situation is that the individuals are part of the unit?
Correct.
Not that the individuals, that all individuals are engaged in criminal acts themselves.
Correct.
Violent act themselves.
Yes.
But the particularized showing is that they're part of the unit.
Correct. That's exactly the district's point. Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Griffith asked you for the law on that. And is your answer that it comes out of Barnum, where there is a reference to the unit?
Yes. And also a Cullinan. This court's decision in Cullinan also supports that notion. You can have a situation where the officers, if they can say or provide a reasonable basis to support their conclusion that all participants were engaged, and they arrested only participants, which again is the district's position in this case.
All participants engaged in what?
A riot, or the alternative charge in this case would be.
But it can't be simply that you're with the group, right? Just standing, just being with the group. If you're in a group and there's some miscreants in the group, are you saying the fact that you're in the group where there are a number of miscreants is probable cause to arrest you?
There's a continuum. I agree that if there was but one person in this group who had thrown a stone and broken a window, that the officers would not.
Five people in the group. What difference does it make? If it's not me, if I'm in that group and I haven't, and no one has any evidence that I have broken a law, how can I get arrested? Just because I'm marching with a group?
Yes, Your Honor, because that's the definition of a riot. It is a group of five or more people.
The definition of a riot is that I have to be willfully inciting the others. What evidence do you have that these folks were willfully inciting the
others? Again, Your Honor, I go back to the evidence.
Just that they're in the group?
No, Your Honor, I go back to the evidence the officers witnessed. All
250.
To be cheering in response and support. And again, this is a reasonableness standard. Officers facing a quickly evolving situation where they have violence directed at them. There clearly was a riot in this case. I don't think there's any dispute that there was rioting. And the officer's response to that riot was to attempt to contain it. And in doing so, a group broke off from the riot, and the officers pursued that group. The riot was complete at that point. The persons in that group were contained in an alley and arrested. There's nothing in the record.
Go to that point, because isn't that the trickiest question? Suppose the evidence had been that there were 10 people in the alley before the police diverted the marchers into the alley, your case would be fatally flawed, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure I agree with that, Your Honor. And the reason is you, again, view the evidence from the perspective of the office, from the officer.
Well, no, suppose the evidence was unquestionably true. There were 10 innocent people in the alley before.
And I accept that, Your Honor, assuming that to be true. Yeah. The question is whether or not the officers had reason to believe that that was the case.
Suppose they knew that there were 10.
If they knew that there were 10 people in that alley,
yes.
Then it depends on, again, whether they were arrested or not.
No. If they don't know which one of the 10, which people were arrested.
Yes, I would agree. I have a Barnum situation.
That would be a Barnum situation.
Absolutely. I agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, what is the evidence that the alley was cleared?
There's several pieces of evidence, Your Honor.
Nothing you put in.
I disagree with that, Your Honor. I think our evidence about the manner in which the alley was contained when the protesters entered is significant evidence.
But
that
I thought you were relying on the videotape, which the defense counsel put in.
Well, Your Honor, the district didn't rely on the videotape because I'm not sure that it's particularly valuable in this case. There's several issues with the videotape. It doesn't capture the arrest. It doesn't capture the property destruction. Right. And it's out of sequence with the events that are relevant to this case. And that's primarily why the district didn't rely on it. But if plaintiffs do urge this court to rely on that. And if the court does rely on it, I don't think the court could ignore the fact that, in the district's view at least, there is a portion of videotape that shows the officers clearing the alley ahead of the protesters' arrival. But in addition to that, again, the officers established a cordoned area. They closed off the alley on the Columbia Road side with a line of civil disturbance unit police officers. They also sealed the alley at the apex of Columbia Road and 18th Street. There's no indication, like Barron, that these were soft police lines, that the officers had sealed the alley, yet they were allowing individuals to pass.
Is there any evidence there was no one else in the alley?
I have to concede, Your Honor, there's no direct evidence. But the government, again, in this case, carried its burden by presenting evidence that the officers believe they arrested only protesters. And plaintiffs have not come forward with any contrary evidence. They allege the mere possibility that there were protesters or innocent bystanders in that alley, but they have not presented any evidence to contradict the district's officers' declarations that they believe that they were only arresting protesters. And the evidence, in fact, turns out to be that that's the case. There are no plaintiffs that claim to have been innocent bystanders. There are no arrestees who say they weren't part of the protest in the parade. So based on those facts, I think the government has established, or at least distinguished this case from Barham. And
didn't none of the plaintiffs claim they came in the back of the alley?
They do claim they came in the back of the alley. My point was none of them claim that they weren't part of the protest. In other words, I know generally in probable cause inquiries, you don't look with hindsight and say, well, we got the right guy, therefore there was probable cause. And that's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm just simply saying that in contrast to the district evidence, there is no evidence that an innocent bystander was arrested in this case.
This group that you're just referring to, they were the group that came via Belmont?
We disagree with, it's again, the officer's position that all persons who were arrested in this case entered the alley through the 18th Street.
You would say the Belmont evidence would go to the merits of the case, not to the probable cause inquiry.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Again, we're viewing the evidence in light most favorable to the district, and the district's evidence is that they all entered through 18th Street. Plaintiffs disagree with that. To the extent that's relevant, I think it creates a material dispute of fact that did warrant a jury trial in this case rather than summary judgment in the plaintiff's favor. In addition, again, just to briefly touch on the alternative basis for probable cause in this case, and that is the parading without a permit. It's conceded in this case that there was a parade and there was no permit. The only issue in this case is whether or not the officers had reason to believe that the plaintiffs did so knowingly. And we would again point to the evidence of the riot as a basis for putting the plaintiffs on notice that their conduct was not permitted in this case.
Wait a minute. How would the riot tell you that there was no permit? You could have a permit for a march which developed into a riot.
Correct.
Why would you work backwards from the proposition that I'm in a riot, therefore I conclude that there was never any permit in this case?
It's not so much that there was a permit, but that the march exceeded the scope of the permit.
You would say it was beyond the scope of any possible.
Exactly, beyond the scope.
Yeah, that's a separate point.
That is, you're right, Your Honor, but it does, I think, establish criminal liability under the DCMR provision.
What about the argument presented that in order to arrest for failure to have a permit, there has to be prior cases and or the policy of the District of Columbia, a prior warning to the marchers?
I think Virginia versus Moore puts to rest the claim that district policy would control that issue.
Yeah, I agree with
you. But in response to the cases, yes. Your Honor, I do agree that the case law does suggest that that is one method of establishing knowledge on the part of the protesters. But I don't believe the case law can be fairly read to say that that is the only method.
Do you have any that say that disintegrating into a riot is a sufficient establishment of the element of knowledge?
I don't have a direct case again, Your Honor, but we're dealing with the totality.
That would be a no, right?
Facts and circumstances, Your Honor, okay. Facing the officers. If I may, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll hear from the appellee.
May it please the court. It is apparent to me that Judge Griffith has shredded the district's argument.
Well, in case it's not apparent to us that he has, you might want to make an argument, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's even conceivable we don't agree with him.
Yeah, you know, you've argued before this three-judge panel before, and we haven't always agreed. Maybe not this same panel, but three-judge panel.
That's correct,
panels.
Your Honor. What,
now, are you seriously contending that Barham controls beyond its facts all the way out to a case? I mean, there were no torches in Barham. They were staying in one place in Barham. This is not a Barham case, is it?
Talking about, okay, on that, there's only one difference between this case and Barham. And
yeah, this was a riot and that one wasn't. Is that the difference?
That's not the question. The question, irrespective of what the misconduct of unknown persons was, it was different misconduct in Barham. That's not the question. That's not the Barham question.
That was daytime in one place where there had been no incentive for the crowd to disperse. This was nighttime, marching through the streets with torches and property damages going on?
That's not the Barham question. The question is whether the alley is like the park. And in Barham, there was affirmative.
That comes to another difference. That's the only difference you see in these facts?
I'm getting to the difference. The difference is that in Barham, there was, in fact, affirmative evidence that there were persons in the park other than those that the police thought. Here, there is no affirmative evidence that there were non-demonstrators in the alley. But that difference does not distinguish the two cases because the district has the burden of proof of excluding the possibility that there were persons other than demonstrators in the alley.
At the probable cause stage,
yes, they do. Yes, Your Honor. As the court said in Barham, what was relevant in Barham was not the actual presence of the evidence. It was that the officers didn't assert.
But in fact, they have asserted that, right? Officer Keller, in his testimony, members of the mob broke several of the bank witnesses. The mob then cheered, and its members raised their arms in celebration.
That's not the question of who's in the alley. That's a different
matter. No, but I'm getting on to the particularized showing here.
Separate issue from who was in the alley. Yes, yeah, that's the issue of whether or not there was probable cause to arrest everyone for rioting. The Barham question is whether there were other people than demonstrators in the alley.
You make a good point, counsel. But what about the government's response, which is the police testify the only people arrested were the marchers?
They did not so testify. Scrutinize those declarations. All of the officers.
We have scrutinized them in favor of the government on this one, counsel.
Well, I'm going to show you. I'm going to tell you that what they say is that they were behind the demonstrators. A group of them ran away from them south on 18th Street, turned right into the alley, and turned right again in the T in the alley. They followed them into the alley, and they arrested persons in the alley. That's all those declarations say. Those declarations do not say that no one else was in the alley,
say no one else is in the alley, according to the government. The government says we arrested the people who came who were the marchers.
But they couldn't identify them as such. They couldn't identify them as such. It's not, there's no declaration saying, all of those people that I saw, all of them in the street. No, the declarations say they went into the alley and arrested persons that they found in the alley. If there were other people in the alley, those officers couldn't differentiate the persons that they didn't recognize them. They couldn't recognize all 70 people, coats, hats, colors. They couldn't do that.
That's a factual issue, yeah. Isn't it, counsel?
It's impossible for them to have done so, and they don't say
they
did.
You ought to have an easy time winning on the merits then, shouldn't you?
But they don't say they did. This is a summary judgment matter.
I realize that.
They don't.
I realize that, and I'm reminding you of that, that this is a summary judgment matter.
That's correct.
And you got the summary judgment, but the movant is not entitled to any inferences on the summary judgment.
I'm not relying on
any. We have to construe everything to the light most favorable to the non-movant, and when you're talking about...
Absolutely.
When you're talking about the evidence before the court on the summary judgment, you seem to be telling us to scrutinize it with a fine-tooth comb in your favor, and that's exactly the opposite of what
favor.
We're going to do.
No, just read what it says. Those officers do not say that the only persons in the alley were the people that came in from 18th Street. They don't say that, and it would have been impossible for them to say that. You can't be out on 18th Street and know whether somebody's in that alley or not.
Counsel,
it was impossible for them
counsel,
to know that.
Counsel, may I ask you a couple questions about the district court's opinion? On page 9 of the district court's opinion, the district court says, second, it refers to the statement of Officer Keller, who was present at the scene, that the mob acted uniformly in celebrating destructive acts by individual protesters, thereby encouraging more such acts. These kinds of generalized statements are legally insufficient to establish probable cause, see Barnum. Is that a correct reading of Barnum?
It's not, Your Honor.
I don't think so either. I appreciate.
What's dispositive on
I appreciate
here,
your candor.
What's dispositive here is that neither Keller nor Lanier could see everyone.
Let me go ahead. I appreciate it very much.
Right. I don't think that's right. No.
Your candor. I thought the district judge was in error on that point. Then on page 10, the district judge says, in fact, it is undisputed the officers were not even able to identify specifically those individuals who engaged in the acts of vandalism. The district therefore has proffered no facts capable of supporting the proposition that Lanier had reasonable particular ground to believe every one of the approximate 70 people arrested was observed committing the crime of rioting. That's error too, isn't it?
That's an incorrect statement for the following reason.
The judge is wrong on that.
Yes, it's incorrect for the following reason. The reason why it's incorrect is because it is available to the government to try to prove that an unidentified group. The problem is the evidence in this case does not prove that, because the officers, the Cullinane exception, where the Cullinane dicta, which talks about where officers on the scene can actually see everyone and that everyone is engaged in a riot, that's fine. If officers can see that, the dispositive point here is that neither Keller nor Lanier could see the entire group. Lanier admitted it. And
But Keller testifies that he did.
No, he doesn't.
The mob then cheered, and its members raised their arms in celebration.
Our point about that is, yes, the declaration says it appears that everyone cheered.
He didn't say it appeared. The mob then cheered, and its members raised their arms in celebration. Well, he sees the mob. He sees the members. His testimony is they raised their arms in celebration.
We challenged this, as we did below, and the district court ruled in our favor, or said that we were right on this, on the ground that this declaration does not meet the Rule 56 requirement of demonstrating competence to say what the officer says. And that is what is dispositive here. This officer was not in a position to see what everyone did. And when he says everyone cheered, that is impossible. Pardon me?
That's a question of fact,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
It's a question of law as to whether or not it is possible.
A question of fact.
No, it's not, Your Honor. It is, well, if you say that a reasonable person, the government just admitted at oral argument that it was impossible for Lanier and Keller to see that all 250 to 300 persons raised an arm.
They said it would have been impossible for them to sort that out exactly.
It was impossible for them to see
that. Do you really think that in a mob situation they have to?
Indeed they do.
The laws against mobbery, assume the presence of a mob, right? Laws against engaging in riot.
About a mob. I mean, a riot is five or more people. Question, we got 250 to 300 people here. The question
is, so you don't think it covers because there were more people? The laws against rioting assume the possibility of a mob. It may be as small as five, but it may be larger than the one here. Can it possibly have been the contemplation of the enactment that they had to sort out each of those 300 people in order to take action against riot?
They had to have individualized probable cause that each and every person they arrested was rioting. That means either doing a riotous act or encouraging it.
Wait a minute.
And they didn't have that.
Wait a minute. Each and every person was rioting?
Yes.
Suppose, does that mean if each and every person was cheering a specific act of violence, that would be insufficient?
No, I don't say that. I'm saying that there is no competent evidence that that occurred, because the
cheering would be
aiding and abetting. Sure, that's fine. That's if it occurred, it would be sufficient. There is no competent evidence that everyone did that, because the officers.
Could there ever be, in the case of a riot of 300 people, could there ever be an individualization beyond the presence in a mob which was cheering? Could you ever be able to establish that?
Well, yes, I think so, because if you've got 300 people and you've got officers surrounding them, and you've got the views.
It would be nice if the riots would always tell you in time to get enough officers to surround the crowd, but
why is that
that's
exactly
what Cullinane is talking about.
You're writing an awful lot of normal circumstances.
That's exactly what Cullinane is talking about, and Barham talks about when those circumstances aren't present,
and that's what
you have to do is give an order to disperse.
That's the situation Keller's describing, but you just say he's not competent to do so?
That's correct.
Why?
Because he's behind the march. He's one person behind the march, and it is indisputable that a person in that position cannot see all the marchers. Counsel admitted that in her argument. Keller and Lanier cannot see everyone. The videotapes confirmed that it was impossible for them to do that.
To march down the 1700 block. Apparently there were six bank windows broken in the 1700 block. Am I getting that right? How long did it take?
The area of Connecticut, of Columbia and 18th. Yes, about six.
Okay. And how long would it take to walk down that?
To walk?
Yeah. I mean, how long did it
walk
take the mob? How long did it take the mob to go that far where six bank windows were broken?
How long did it take them to walk a block?
Right.
Well, I'm not. I don't know.
Not long. I mean, the point is not long.
Not very long.
And six bank windows.
Three or four minutes.
The testimony is six bank windows were broken by members of that mob.
No, not by members of the mob, by persons in the area. There was no identification of who did it.
Well, and then there was cheering after each of the breaking the bank windows. And Keller's testimony. No, Keller's testimony is that everyone raised.
Say that. But that testimony is incompetent because he could. It is impossible for a person to say that they hear 250 people all cheer.
Yeah. So you seem to be writing this circumstance out of the rioting law, which seems to be precisely the circumstance most contemplated by the enactors of the rioting law. You say it's impossible to prove a riot under the circumstances, which are the most dangerous riot.
Not at all, Your Honor. What can be proved is precisely what Cullinane says might be proved. If the officers on the scene can actually see that everyone's rioting, then as an exception
you
to
the
law.
You've got to have one cop for each rioter before we can have this case covered by the law?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow
the question. You have to have one cop for each person rioting to be able to do that, wouldn't you?
I don't think so. I think one officer could see 10.
Well, your view is if there were 250 marchers and there was a riot, there has to be evidence that all 250 people were cheering. You can't,
yes,
unless you have that evidence.
Yes.
And your argument is unless you have that, you can't.
Or raising an arm.
Prosecute.
Or raising an arm.
I'm not sure. I think your argument cuts the wrong way. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's utterly impossible.
It's not impossible if you have a riot that's stationary, gathered in one place where you can see that everyone is focused.
If you've got 250,
you're going to make the police plan the
ball. I'm rioting. I'm rioting. You can arrest me.
No, Your Honor, I'm not saying that at all. But the facts here are we have officers behind a march. The video, and they cannot see any of the conduct at all of the people in the front of the march. For nearly 4 minutes.
They're going to have to get together the planners of the next riot before they can arrest them and make sure they get positioned.
There's no evidence that there was a planned riot, Your Honor. That's not
exactly the point, counsel. You're treating this as if this is something the police can plan for, that they can have the right number of people out there to count the right number of rioters. It's exactly the point. It isn't planned as a riot. And you seem to be requiring the level of circumstance you'd have if they did get to participate.
I'm requiring that there, as the Barham court held, that there be particularized.
Barham was not remotely similar to this case.
I'm talking about the proposition that individualized probable cause is required as to every person who was arrested. And the contention here is that everyone was rioting. There must be individualized
probable
cause.
Was Barham even involving a violation of the rioting statute?
No.
No, it was not.
But
it was demonstrating without a permit, was it not? Now, I was not on Barnum, but I was on a parallel.
That was unidentified misconduct. The requirement of individualized probable cause is stated in Barham and established by other cases.
Individualized probable cause for participating in a riot very different than it would be for participating in, for example, demonstrating without a permit?
No.
It's not?
No.
Every single offense has its elements.
Yes.
And they are different than every other.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. Yes. And here, to prove that what they say is that everyone raised an arm simultaneously and everyone cheered simultaneously. And the people who say that were not in a, it was impossible for the people who say that to see that. They could not see the people at the front of the march. A 4 minute segment of the Jordan video shows continuously.
Suppose counsel 100
the front people, of the march
100 people are engaged in a march which is alleged to be a riot because 20 people along the sides are shot and killed, it's undisputable that every one of the 100 is marching along. It isn't determined whether every one of the 100 had fired a gun. Do you have individualized grounds for probable cause to arrest
Absolutely
all?
Absolutely not. No. What you do with what that group is what is said in Barham. You order them to disperse. If you can't, arrest people for firing shots if you can't see that they fired the shots. There has to be individualized probable cause. You have to have probable cause.
Your time is up unless my colleagues have further questions. Seeing none, thank you, counsel. I believe the appellant had some time left. No, if you have 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I just want to reiterate, I think, the overarching themes in the district's case. First is that the evidence in this case needs to be viewed from the perspective of the police officers. As the Supreme Court has repeatedly said, the probable cause determination is a factual and practical consideration that involves issues of everyday life and not legal technicalities. The officers in this case reasonably concluded that there was a riot and that the persons they arrested, in fact, had participated in that riot.
Could you speak to your opponent's point about the competence of Officer Keller to offer the testimony that he saw every member raise his hand?
I believe Officer Keller's testimony is competent. The source of that information is not reflected in the record, but in any case, of course, it has recognized when dealing with probable cause, the officers may rely on the cumulative evidence or information they receive from other officers. To Officer Keller, it appeared that everyone in the crowd was raising their hand.
He's basing that on conversations with others?
I don't know what he's basing that on. The record's not clear.
His counsel's right. From what we know of where Officer Keller was positioned, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to say that he saw all the crowd, right?
And again, I've characterized his testimonies that it appeared to him that all of the crowd was cheering. Again, I have to concede that if one person out of 300 wasn't cheering, I don't know that the officer could say with certitude that all 300 people were cheering. I just don't think that's the standard.
If he went ahead and arrested the one person who he didn't see, would there be a problem there?
No, I don't believe so. And again, Your Honor, we're dealing with reasonable probabilities. From the officer's perspective. From the officer's perspective in this case, it appeared
that all
persons were participating. Again, even if you assume that only 80% of the crowd was cheering, it's reasonable to assume that the other 20% of the crowd heard those cheers and understood what was going on around them.
Just one question about the one person who, there's summary judgment for one person on damages, right? Wasn't there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that case in any way different from the rest of the whole case?
That was on an issue of...
Ms. Singer, was it?
Yeah, I believe, Your Honor, if I'm not mistaken, that was an issue related to the manner in which she was arrested and not the question of whether or not there was probable cause for her arrest.
So it's not connected?
It's not connected to the issues that are before the court, no, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the judge...
That's not appealed, then?
No, sir. No.
Okay.
Right. That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Call the next case.